This is a download from the BBC. For more information, click bbc.co.uk/Radio Manchester. The Rugby League Extra Podcast.
BBC Radio Manchester.
Rugby League Extra.
BBC Radio Manchester.
A very good evening to you. An hour of Rugby League news, chat and discussion is on the way. And this evening, as part of the BBC's Women in Sports Week, with you tonight, Wigan Warriors Community Foundation's Amanda Wilkinson, who's Rugby League's first female Level 3 qualified coach in the history of the sport. Also with you tonight, England Rugby League player Jodie Cunningham. Plus, you'll hear from Rugby League referee Tara Jones. Along with that, as always, there's plenty to discuss. This week, Super League clubs have voted to introduce the marquee player rule. Do you agree, or will it simply widen the gap further between the best of Super League and the worst? Wasn't the idea of this new structure to provide a bit of parity? So, just when it looks like that might be happening, let's have another alteration. Have the Super League clubs got it right? What do you think? Give us a call right now, 0161 228 2255. Text 81333, that's 81333, then the letters M-A-N-C. Normal rates apply to your text. Tweet us at BBC Radio Manc. You can email manchestersports@bbc.co.uk. It's your local station for sports. This is BBC Radio Manchester.
Rugby League Extra.
BBC Radio Manchester.
So lots and lots to discuss. It's going to be a cracking hour. Let's get straight to it. Marquee players are in. The Salford owner is Marwan Kukash and he's also the chairman of the Red Devils. Clearly he's in favour of the introduction of a marquee player.
The sport for once could go out and compete for the very best rugby players in the world, could compete with rugby union, could compete with the NRL. And it could only be good news for the sport and the fans.
That's what Marwan Kukash says. The Huddersfield Giants managing director, Richard Thewlis, has released a statement today.
This decision creates an uneven playing field, as only two or three of the richest clubs will be able to afford to take advantage of it, just at a time when spectators are enjoying greater uncertainty of outcome, which is delivering closer games and greater excitement, along with the tightest league table ever. The player rule will give an unfair advantage to the richer clubs, which the salary cap was designed to prevent.
So what do you think? 0161 228 2255. Let's find out what you have been thinking. Here's our very own Libby Willis.
Well, marquee players, signings, whichever you wish to call it, always gets a lot of traction here on Radio Manchester. It is a subject that you guys really like to get involved with, and we thank you for that. So Thomas has said, yes, how can we afford marquee players but not reserves? Priorities are all wrong. He goes on to say he honestly doesn't think it'll improve Super League. He does say, one old past it Aussie doesn't make a team. Ouch. Craig's been in touch and he says, no, the gap already exists. Only Wigan, Saints, Wire and Leeds can realistically win Super League Grand Final. Marquee player rule can help stop the talent drain to the NRL and rugby union, though, which is something we desperately need to do. Graham Ward's been in touch at BBC Radio Manx saying that Craig makes some good points that he agrees with. He then goes to say, Wigan are proving that players will return from NRL and rugby union if conditions are right. And finally for me in this bit, Ian Gatwood says perhaps the championship sides will now be reserves as they have no chance of Super League anymore. He also says every second counts. That's a Super League caption, has become every pound counts and the slippery slope to financial ruin. So we want to hear from you on any of tonight's talking points. Maybe you have a question for our lovely guests. Text 81333. Start that message with the word Manc. They're charged at your standard network rates. Find us on social media, searching for BBC Radio Manchester, or pick up the phone and call 0161 228 2255.
That is Libby Willis. Right, let me just make sure I've got this up, just in case people are listening to that and not quite clear where we stand at the moment. The clubs have voted 8-4 earlier this week to introduce this rule, which is interpreted as a marquee player. You can get £100,000 of a nominated player's wage of part of the £1.8 million salary cap. That rises to £175,000 if the player has not come through their own ranks. So just for clarification, let me tell you how I understand and interpret that, Trevor Hunt. So if Sam Tompkins returns to Wigan and as their marquee player, they can pay him what they want. Because he's a player that's come through the ranks, it will only cost them, on the salary cap statement, £100,000.
Correct. Right. And if he was happened to be Trent Barrett, then it would be £175,000. So that's what it's all about. For me, Jack, I'm not for it.
Okay, well, we'll see.
I mean, let's face it, there's only 12 marquee players that will be allowed throughout Super League and who can afford it. So I'm not for it.
Okay, we'll get to our guests in just a moment. They're both here, Wigan Warriors Community Foundation's Amanda Wilkinson. Very good evening to you, Amanda.
Good evening, Jack.
Is this right? You are the very first qualified Level 3 coach in the history of the sport?
As a woman, I am, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done. Yeah, absolutely. Also with you tonight is Jodie Cunningham. Evening to you, Jodie.
Good evening.
England Rugby League player, of course. I know you've both been in before. We'll chat in great detail in just a moment or two. But let's go. Jodie, of course, from Thato Heath.
Sorry.
And we'll speak to her in more detail. We will get it right in just a moment or two. Let's speak next, though, because we're going to do a refs rule tonight. Ben Thaler is with you live. Evening to you, Ben.
Evening, Jack.
Thanks very much indeed for being with us. I know you're a witness tonight.
Well, Ben, thanks for joining us. I know that it was James Child who had the game on the weekend when Salford played witness. But the one thing that's been a big talking point at the time, and there's been a bit of controversy about it, was Daryl Griffin's dismissal. Now, I was commentating on the game, and my first impression was that it was a yellow card. It wasn't something that warranted a red. I was a bit surprised when that came out, and it was a gut reaction. I saw it again repeated on the TV screens. I still wasn't sure it was a red. I was just wondering, after all this, of course, he was cleared, wasn't he? He was given SOS. Just can you explain to us what the thinking was behind it initially? And as I say, I appreciate it was James Charles' game.
I think you've got to look at it to start with. He's not being cleared because SOS means that you're still guilty.
Can we clarify what, just for the benefit of somebody who might not know what you're talking about, SOS is sending off sufficient.
Sending off sufficient.
Thank you.
That means that the disciplinary panel have deemed that the punishment he received on the day for the offences committed was appropriate. What would have been interesting, if he maybe have only got 10 minutes or nothing happened, you never know, he may have got a ban. Because there's one thing that is evident from the decision, and you can disagree and agree with it, because it's very much like some people said, a penalty try. That's in the opinion of the referee or video referee, and your opinion or my opinion might be different to James's last week and things like that. There's one thing you can't argue, and that's that Darryl catches him round the head, and the contact is straight round with the forearm round his head. You've got, as Trevor just said, you've got the option of a sin bin. I may personally have decided to choose for him a sin bin. Other colleagues may have decided not to do anything. Some colleagues may have decided to agree with James and send him straight off. So you've got to look at, obviously, the tackle. Is it reckless? You could maybe argue in this case it was reckless. But there is no doubt that the first contact is right round the head of the opponent, which knocks him straight to the floor. You'd then probably look at, was he dipping, going into the tackle? Did he fall? Did he step Daryl, and did Daryl stick his arm out and catch him or whatever? So there is obviously all these bits of criteria obviously got to put in to making this decision. James' decision and the input he was given by his colleagues that it was direct contact with the head, and it sent him off.
Yeah, well, Ben, I do appreciate that he's a split second to make that decision. Maybe he has a little bit of advice through the earpiece, but in reality, the mitigation for it that you've already explained about slipping, etc., that might well have been taken into account by the disciplinary panel. But when it comes to sending off, we seem to be back where we started right at the beginning of the season, not really sure what warrants sending off and what doesn't.
Again, that's all subjective, and I can't disagree with that, because I personally, if I'm honest, when it happened...
Ben, I'm sorry, I will let you answer. Go on, you finish what you're going to say.
Go on, I was about to say, like you just said it, again, that's subjective. I'll admit, when I watched the game from in the ground on the last Saturday, because I was video refereeing the second game, I thought, God, that's a bit... Is that harsh? Sadly, obviously, there'd been all the sadness at the family and the grievance that they had in the week. Sadly, when you're officiating, you can't take that into account. So that one where people said, oh, there's big sympathy and everything like that, sadly, you can't do that. That's like if somebody knocked on and we say, oh, well, we'll leave it then because of things that happened. But I didn't agree. Hand up, I didn't agree straight away that it was a red card, and I made my thoughts clear when I got asked. I thought it was a sin bin, and he probably would have received some further punishment this week, because you can't... Can't argue that he does catch him around the head. But the more and more you watch something, sometimes it's like you said, they have a split decision. The more and more you watch something, you can change your mind, say it looks worse, or the more and more you watch something, you might think, no, that's nothing at all.
But again, just
different people's opinions.
Ben, just cutting to the chase then, really. If somebody clatters somebody around the head in a tackle, they can expect a red card, and anything less than that's a bonus.
Well, realistically, if we look at it this way, the sin bin was brought in so that... the sin bin weren't brought in originally. The sin bin was being brought in this year on foul play. So if a match official deems that an incident is severe, but not severe enough to get sent off, and the team who they're actually playing that week gets some reward because obviously a team is brought down a less player by the sin bin, then a referee would use the sin bin. Because it's the old adage that somebody gets banned because an incident's put on report, and the team the following week, they get the reward from a certain player being banned.
Okay,
so
Ben.
That's one thing to look to bring in.
Ben, thanks very much for joining us. A pleasure to speak to you as always. Ben Thaler coming to the wicket for the Rugby Football League. I'm still not convinced he should have had his red card, but there again, he got it. He got sending off sufficient, which, you know, sometimes an easy way of making sure they don't have to give the fine back. So there you go. That's another thing in their appeal money. Anyway, we've got two lovely guests here. I noticed that when Libby said we've got two lovely guests, he didn't say we've got two lovely presenters, but I'll take her to task on that one afterwards. We've got Jodie Cunningham and Amanda Wilkinson from Rugby League. And Jodie, you're a player. Amanda, you're a coach. Just tell us who you coach then.
I coach the youngsters at Wigan Warriors. So we look at the potentials in under 14s. We work on their skills, and it gives you a chance to do a bit of talent ID. And I've just currently been asked to coach the GB Teachers ladies team. So that's a new one for me. We have our first game on Sunday.
Who have you coached then? Tell us some names, Amanda.
As in youngsters?
Yes.
Over the years, of course, coached quite a lot. At the moment, the 19s at Wigan, so you're talking your Oliver Gildarts, and breaking into first team, you've got George Williams. Those are two of the lads that, you know, over the years I'd coached from a young age, in my 12s and 13s.
As a level 3, are you now qualified to coach in Super League?
Yeah, I could take up the top spot now.
And would that ever be an ambition of yours? Do you think that's something you could realistically achieve?
A realistic goal, I do want to coach at academy level. I really want to get hold of being able to coach 19s rugby league. Just feel I like the intensity of it and the commitment from the players that you can expect. To assist, I look at somebody like Paul Deacon at the moment that's assisting at Wigan Warriors. I did my level 3 with Paul, and I'd love to be in a position where he's at. And I know I could do it, but whether I'd ever get the opportunity... You know.
You're supposed to tell us now. I actually got more marks than Paul. That's what you're supposed to tell us.
Right, Amanda. why do you add the last bit? You know, you wonder if you'll ever get that opportunity. Why wouldn't you be given that opportunity?
I think because of the amount of coaches that I've worked with, you know, over the years. You know, I've been coaching for 15 years now, from grassroots all the way to national under 16s. And then obviously the scholarship stuff that I've done. And the coaches that I've worked with, I've been up there, you know, coaching at Super League. And I just don't seem to be able to follow the same pathway as coaches have. So Brian McDermott, that coaches at Leeds, you know, he was somebody that I worked with on scholarship at Leeds Rhinos, Daryl Powell and people like that. I worked alongside those coaches. And they go on that pathway where they climb quite steadily into your academy and then onto first team. I don't seem to sort of follow that same pathway.
Is that because you're a woman?
I guess it is. It has to be, really. I believe that I'm as good as those guys that are coaching there. It's quite hard to measure coaching. I don't think there's a right way and a wrong way to coach, but if you can believe in what you do...
You certainly shouldn't be judged, you know, on being on a female coach, should you?
No, not at all.
Is that unfair then?
I guess it is, really, yeah. It's quite frustrating because you watch other people doing it and you know you're capable of doing the same job that they're doing, and I've got a passion to do that. I really do enjoy coaching, and I'd love to now take it to the next level and be able to be...
Right. The board, compared to men, do you feel that you are being rewarded inadequately in terms of the possibility of climbing the ladder? Because pretty much that's what you've said, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I have, really. Yeah, it's a bit of an awkward one, really, because you don't want to come across bitter in any way, because I love my coaching and all the opportunities.
No,
that
but
I've
you
had.
Want to be treated with equality.
Yeah,
that's what you want, isn't
definitely,
it?
Definitely. Yeah, I want to be.
And that's
rewarded
what should happen, isn't it?
It should. It should. Yeah.
Jodie, you're a player. Yep. Are you coached by a man or are you coached by a woman?
Men, both at club side and at
At national level, both men, yeah.
And is that because there are only men, or the majority of men, or are there very few like Amanda who's got the right level to coach you?
There's very few women coaches around. I mean, I've been coached by Amanda before. I think that's the only female... Brenda Dolbeck, she's coaching at Featherstone Rovers now. She's coaching me at national level. They're the only two female coaches I've come across in the last 10, 11 years I've been playing.
Becky Watt. It's that time of the year again when I go in search of the latest fixtures, fittings and furnishings for the home. I'll be live at the Ideal Home Show at Event City chatting to home improvement experts George Clark and Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. Plus, Martin Lewis will be telling you how you can make your money go further, and I'll be bringing you the highlights from more than 300 exhibitors and stalls. There are bathrooms, bedrooms, food, gardens, gadgets. The list is so long.
Becky Watt.
Tomorrow from noon.
BBC Radio Manchester.
Well, every week we ask a celebrity in rugby league, a player or a coach or an official, for their six questions. We ask them six questions. Five of them, the answers they give us are fact. One of them is fiction. Today it's Super League... what was his title? Chief Executive of the Super League, Blake, General Manager of Super League, Blake Solly. We get there in the end.
Yeah, so these are his answers to this week's Fact or Fiction. Remember, one of these answers is not true. Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. How would you like to be remembered?
As someone who worked very hard and was very passionate about making rugby league a better sport.
In one word, how would your teammates or friends describe you?
Passionate.
What's your favourite sport to watch?
Rugby league. Grew up with it. Always love watching it. Can't get enough of it, really. Magic weekend, summer bash, whatever it is, I'll watch any rugby league that's going.
Do you sing in the shower?
No.
What's your favourite app?
Difficult one. Twitter, Facebook. Probably go with Twitter as my favourite app.
What was your best subject at school?
History was my best subject at school. Just something I was always interested in, funny enough. I think you always tend to do best at the subjects you're interested in. History I was very interested in, chemistry, mathematics, anything that required any logic I was probably a little bit more at sea. So history was certainly my best subject. Tell me lies, tell
me sweet little lies. Find out very, very soon the fact. We will be separating the fact from the fiction. Let's find out what you've been saying. Here's Libby Willis.
I will say I was really surprised with his answer on that one. Okay, so let's get to your text. And Amanda, I'm going to warn you, there is a question for you at the end. Okay. So Casual Dez in Wireland says, Warrington desperately need a halfback and marquee player. Target should be an NRL State of Origin level player, either Cooper Cronk, James Maloney or English-born Gareth Widdop. On whether it's going to widen the gap, Michael's been in touch. He says, of course it will. It's going the way of Tory Britain. Money matters, not a level playing field. Mark Lincoln's been in touch. Hello, Mark. He's text 81333. And he says, hiya, great show. Thank you very much. It says, it's just the start. One marquee player now, but when will they want two, then three marquee players? Are we going down the football way? Mark, you may be onto something.
Spare me, please. Spare me.
Paul from Warrington has phoned in. He says, this isn't on any of tonight's talking points, but he wants to get off his chest. He says he thinks that every time the TV cameras pan to Sean Wayne during a game, that he's always using abusive language. He thinks it's not right, as he's supposed to be a role model. Mr. Wayne, cut it out. And John from Bolton says, I do not agree with marquee player. There can only be signings if a club has rich backers. If there is extra money available, I agree with Phil Clark. We should reintroduce a reserve league. And as I said, a question for Amanda. Tim Fisher has been in touch.
Oh, we know Tim.
We know Tim. And he says, what's it like to have the loudest mobile phone in the world?
Just back at you, Tim. What's it like producing a pamphlet for each home game?
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Well, that's it. And not only are you going to have Sean Wayne saying, well, when do you want my job when you get back? You're going to have, like, Tim Fisher saying, when do you want mine as well? So there you go. Plenty of going on. Tim Fisher is the
media manager for Wigan Warriors.
That's great, correct. Guy. Anyway, we've got Jodie... back to you, Libs.
Just got to give the numbers out, Travis. All right. We want to hear from you. Maybe you do have a question for our guest, Amanda and Jody. You can get in touch. You can call 0161-228-2255. You can email manchestersports@bbc.co.uk or head over to social media and search for us on Twitter @BBC Radio Manc and on Facebook, BBC Radio Manchester.
Right.
That's Libby with the new glasses on. Right, Jordy, you're an England Rugby League international.
Yeah.
Proud of it, I guess.
Very proud, yeah.
Okay. Does that cost you personal finance?
It does now. It's never used to. It used to all be funded.
All right, well, tell me what used to happen and tell me what happens now.
So when I first got brought into the system, so I was 17, that was good 6 years ago now.
Never.
You're getting on a bit now, aren't you?
Never.
I know I don't look it. when I first got brought in, it was all paid for, all complete kit, everything, travel expenses, everything was paid for, and it was really felt like a professional system that I was part of. Lately, since the World Cup, we've had quite a lot of funding cut. On the 14th of June, we're going to tour France, so there's going to be a 20-woman squad touring France for two test games, and each of us have got to contribute £300 towards the trip, along with these other costs involved with travelling and all other expenses that come along with playing. So to add that extra £300 onto them costs, it does kind of hit you quite hard, and it does make it difficult for some of the girls who are students and don't necessarily have particularly high paid jobs. £300 quite a lot to have.
I'm not sure if you know the answer to this, but I'm pretty sure I do. Do you think the men have to pay for England?
I'd very much doubt it.
Jack, I've said this. You cannot. This is like comparing pears and apples. Really, I've got to say this. Super League players are professionals, right? They get paid. That's their 100% job. They represent the country.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying Amanda does. Jordy doesn't represent her country. But what's happened here is that the parity that the ladies' sport, the women's sport, has got is with the amateur male sport, where they too have to pay to play for their country. Now, I think that's totally wrong. I think it's totally wrong that anybody playing for the country at any level should have to fund that themselves. But what's happened here, it would seem, since the World Cup is a downgrading almost of the status of women's rugby, where somebody had it seemingly on a parity with professional rugby league, although you weren't getting paid to play, you're just getting your expenses. And now you're back where it is with the top amateur levels. You play at Thatter Heath, so your lads at Thatter Heath, who have been selected to go on the next tour to South Africa, wherever that is, they've got to pay £1,250 to go on that. So that's what's happened to you.
I'm going to cut to the chase because we'll be dancing around this issue all night. It's clearly discriminatory. If Jordy has to pay her own money to represent a country, and the men don't.
No, Jack, I disagree. You're talking about different levels. You're talking about amateur sport against professional sport. But I agree that anybody who represents the country, if they're an amateur or not, should not be having to fund that trip themselves.
Exactly. So why is it not the same for all?
Because
Look, it's the same representation that Jordy is providing for England as a female as Sam Tompkins is for England as a male, you know, and I can't believe for one minute he has to cough up money to represent
Sam Tompkins. Doesn't.
Right, okay, so why should Jordy then?
Because, as Jordy said, as we all agree, Jordy is not as yet a professional sports person. Now, if the ladies' rugby league or women's rugby league went professional, then you might see you've got that parity. Jordy, we're talking arguing between ourselves like we always do.
We're
so
realistic. We appreciate that, and we appreciate that we are amateurs, but also, if you talk about amateur men, they're not at the top of their game, or otherwise they would be on the same level
as
Sam Tompkins, and I am at the top that I could possibly get in my sport. So there is that comparison as well, when you can't compare. Somebody who is an amateur men's player isn't at that top standard, which I would like to think we all are at the best standard we could get to.
Look, I don't know if this is ever going to happen, but this is what should happen, in my opinion. I know that, you know, friends are few and times are hard, but surely, I don't know who this is aimed at, really, whether it's the Rugby Football League, an international committee, surely there should be a set amount of money, and for the England amateur men as well, to set aside, because this is you could argue that at that level it's even more important than it is once you've stepped up the ladder, further up the ladder, because if you don't encourage people like Jordy at the age she is now, and all of a sudden people have to start paying for this, that and the other, surely they're going to say, well, I can't afford to do this. And that cannot possibly be right.
Sport England so who funds all this, Jack.
Well, they need to set aside some funding.
It's not Sport. Sport England do it on a business plan that's put in by the Rugby Football League, in which women's rugby, amateur rugby, professional rugby, development of kids is all in there. So this is where it all have to do. And they have key performance indicators at each level where you've got to get so many players paying to get, this is Sport England, to get your funding. If you don't hit that, it gets cut. Rugby league's been cut over the last two tranches because we've not been getting the players in. Now, Amanda, how difficult is it to get players in who are young lads, and how more difficult is it to get women playing?
I think Jody made a really good point in the fact, you know, you're comparing at the top level, but Jody is at the top level in the ladies' game. She is at her peak and she's representing England, and that's as far as her pathway goes. Whether the pool is as big, you know, where you're creating it from, so your amateur game, you know, if you look in the man's game, Sam Tompkins has gone through a large circle of competitive and an environment that's much larger than the girls' game. But Jody is still there and rightfully should be able to put on that shirt and be given that shirt at that level, because she has fought to get that shirt just equally as much as he has. I think that's a really good point that she made. It's about recognising that that's where the women's game is, this is where the man's game is, and that's how it becomes an equal point to me. Getting back to your question on getting people into the game, that's right down to your grassroots and your school engagement for me. If you get schools rugby right, if you get rugby in schools and get the teacher training correct with those people that are actually confident in rugby league, for some reason teachers, not all teachers, but teachers do tend to go away from rugby league because they see the contact factor and they're wary of doing it. If you can instill it like football within schools, the funding in football, and teachers are confident in giving a football to kids, get rugby into schools, you're going to get more and more people doing it.
Fantastic. Jody, how did you get into it then? How did you get into playing rugby league?
At high school, I think it was my second year of high school, I started playing, and this is where my argument comes in.
In a boys' team or a girls' team?
In a girls' team that school had set up. And my argument is, I think the RFL always think of the women's game as in, it's not economical. Nobody's going to pay a lot of money to come and watch a women's game, but they don't think of, big picture of, my family wasn't a rugby family. We were football, watched football, went to football games, bought football shirts, football merchandise all the time. I started playing just because my friends did. Not any other reason. I wasn't interested in the sport. I just felt left out. So I thought, you know what, yeah, I'll give it a go. It doesn't matter if I'm not that good. At least I'm joining in. Absolutely loved it. Fell in love with it from the first second. So from that point on, I've gone to Warrington games, the Magic Weekends, Challenge Cup Finals, Grand Finals, and my mum, my dad, my brother, we've had Warrington season tickets. Every year we all have a Warrington top. We're mad fans and we go to everything now. And if you think of the money that's brought into the sport, as well as all the friends that they take to the game, just getting that one person into sport, whether it be a woman or a bloke or a girl or a boy, it's a family environment, and you just need to get that one person involved to realise how good of a sport it is, and it drags everybody in.
And you've just identified why there should not be any discrimination. What you said earlier on then, Jordy, is that, unless I've got this completely wrong, that you're suggesting that the governing body doesn't support you equally compared to your male colleagues.
Well, I think that's obvious that's the case, and I do understand there's always going to be that difference. I'm not deluded to think it's going to be completely equal, because it won't. And the women's sport everywhere is fighting to get that equality, and it is growing. But I just believe that you've got to look at the bigger picture, in the sense of, it does put money and interest back into rugby league just by getting anybody involved, especially girls.
You were in the World Cup. You were in the Women's World Cup. Now, obviously, I watched quite a lot of the World Cup because the women's were on, and I was fortunate to be out in Australia when the Women's World Cup was on, and New Zealand played, I think it was Great Britain, was it, in the final? In
2008, I know. I think it was a New Zealand Australia final.
Well,
yeah.
I certainly saw New Zealand play England at one stage in that. And over in Australia, New Zealand, rugby league, women's rugby league, it's quite big, isn't it? You do get good crowds.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're professional or not. You tell us?
And as far as I'm aware, they're not. But that's I'm not clued up on whether they are or aren't. As far as I'm aware, they're not professional, but the support that they get, I think, is quite.
Yeah, and from the sport as well. And you've been out to Australia, or I think maybe your mother was, who's been out. She was telling us at one stage that when she was over there, the under-16s, how big the involvement was in Australia for women and for girls rugby league.
Yeah, definitely. We went as it was Warrington under-16s girls, and we raised a lot of money to go out there and play against the Australian girls teams at the time. And the funding and the setups they had there were brilliant, and it just showed how good of a setup they had. And it would be brilliant if we could get that same kind of atmosphere here, and just put a bit of money into the women's game, it will grow. Like we've seen with the rugby union, it can grow. It just needs that little bit of support and that push to get it there.
Sorry, Jody, Jack, just chasing this, but obviously that's women's rugby league. But Jody, you're also involved with grassroots rugby league with young men as well, or young boys and the like, I think. So when it comes down to that, is there not enough investment from the RFL in grassroots sport anyway, in rugby league, whether it's boys, girls or whoever? Should they be putting more money, investing more money at that level in the schools, in the local clubs?
They are all the time. At the moment, they've come up with a Sky Tri funding that's gone into schools, so they are now supporting the foundations. That money's being used very well as well within the foundations at each of the club at the Super League level. I suppose that goes down to, again, each club that's given that funding, do they use it wisely? Have they got the right clientele in there that are going to use that honestly? And at grassroots level, you know, the amateur game, the numbers are there. It's about keeping them in there. I think, you know, you need to invest in coaches a lot more. I think, you know, you've got, if you get a load of children down but you've not got the right coaches in there with the right ethos to keep people engaged. So, for example, talking about the girls' game, there isn't a lot of guys out there or girls, for example, that want to be coaching the girls. So is there an opportunity to go and play rugby at St Jude, St Pat's for girls? There is at those two clubs that I've used, but it's not in every club at grassroots, and that's because there's not always the coach to do that, because they don't want to coach girls.
Amanda, are you, and I'm going to ask the same question to you in a moment, Jordy, do you consider yourself to be a role model for other women?
Oh,
with God, what you're doing?
I'd like to think I was. Having got my level three, I was saying earlier, I've done quite a few talks within universities and colleges to try and inspire women in sport, you know, because I do think that we're probably dominated by males in general in quite a lot of different sports. So my husband's a lecturer at UCLan, and he asked me to go along and just try and encourage girls on the sports degrees to stay engaged, you know, to let them recognise that, you know, I've coached at the top level, both male and female, and it can be done. You know, there's no reason why we can't coach males.
Okay, thanks very much indeed for the time being. That is Amanda Wilkinson from Wigan Warriors. Jody Cunningham, a rugby league player, is here. Amanda, of course, a level three qualified rugby league coach. Just a reminder, tomorrow morning, Mike Sweeney, right here on BBC Radio Manchester, 9-10, will also be looking at the Women in Sport Week, which is going on right across the BBC here this week. It's 20 minutes to 7.
BBC Music Day. BBC Radio Manchester is paying tribute to some of the great artists from our part of the world. Take a look at our Facebook page now to see our versions of three iconic albums, featuring me, Becky Want, on the cover of Lisa Stansfield's Affection. Mike Sweeney, Alison Butterworth, Phil Trow and Sam Walker posing as The Smiths outside Salford Lads Club, and Andy Crane, Jimmy Wagg, Alan Bezick, Mike Shaft and Eamon O'Neill in the actual house used by Oasis for the cover of Definitely Maybe. Throughout the week, we'll tell you how we recreated the album sleeves. Then tomorrow, we'll play a track from a Greater Manchester artist each hour, and you can pick the songs for Mike Sweeney's Rock Back the Clock. BBC Music Day, tomorrow on BBC Radio Manchester.
Don't forget, you can download as well Rugby League Extra. You'll be able to download this podcast tonight, certainly around about 7:30, if not even before, with the wonderful talent we have working on it here at BBC Radio Manchester. To do that, bbc.co.uk/Radio Manchester. Loads of great stuff there you can download. Not forgetting, of course, tomorrow night, big night of Super League. 6-7, brand new cricket programme. Bill Rice in the chair tomorrow evening. That's going to be brilliant, as is from 7 until 10.
commentary on Salford at St Helens. I'll be at the Halliwell Jones for Warrington against the Catalan Dragons. That's your bill of fare tomorrow evening here on BBC Radio Manchester. Tonight, we're talking as the BBC, right across the BBC this week. It's Women in Sport Week with you and me, Amanda Wilkinson from Wigan, Jodie Cunningham, who is an England Rugby League player. Let's speak to an England Rugby League referee, or certainly a referee. It's Tara Jones. Evening to you, Tara.
Evening.
Thanks very much indeed for being with us. You're a female referee in rugby league. What's that experience been like?
It's really good. I enjoy refereeing on a weekly basis, and just the support that you get behind me, and it's just really good. And I'm involved in rugby in other ways as well. I play too, but refereeing, I just love it.
Who do you play for?
I play for Fatawif alongside Jodie, and I'm also in the England squad.
What position?
I'm playing centre for England.
Now, come on, Tara. What level referee are you? And you best tell us how old you are, because to me, at the moment, you don't sound old enough to be on this programme without an adult.
I'm 18 at the moment, and I'm currently refereeing Academy Under-19s. I had my first game at that level a few weeks ago.
You have to ignore Trevor, he's a bit of a dinosaur.
And having done that level, I mean, you'll have ambitions in refereeing. Have you been given an idea of how far you can go in the refereeing ladder? Could we see it at Wembley in years to come?
There's no reason why not. I can't progress just the same as the lads, so just take it step by step and see how far I get, really.
I don't know whether you've been listening to what we've been talking about a little bit earlier about how coaching Amanda here, Amanda Wilkinson, she was saying that she's got the same level of coaching badge as certain top coaches in Super League, and the pathway there could be difficult. You're in refereeing, you've done your academy academy game. Are you seeing that you're doing the same path as maybe a Ben Thaler or a Richard Silverwood, and therefore do you see that your path is possible, whereas Amanda's at the moment is very difficult?
Yeah, definitely I see it as possible, because like the likes of Ben Thaler and Phil Bentham, they started off at grassroots refereeing from a young age, and they got took through the system, and I know of other referees that I've worked alongside, and I've seen them develop, and I don't see why not. I can't do the same.
Tara, why did you first want to become a referee?
I've played since a young age, and I played with a boys' team. And then when I got to 12, I had to give up playing with the boys. And although I do still play, I took up refereeing as a way to stay involved and a different insight to the game.
And when you first started turning up to referee matches, did that provoke any type of reaction?
No, I don't think so, not at all. Sometimes coaches see it as a bit of a shock, or parents see it as a bit of a shock, but I feel personally they give me just as much respect as they do any male referee.
Now, hold on, we could have that one contested and argued for a long time about giving referees respect on the touchline, you know, Tara. So, I mean, do you get a bit of abuse from time to time, or are they all very, gentlemanly towards you?
But I think every referee gets abuse. I don't think anyone likes referees, but I wouldn't say it's any more because I'm female. It's just the general things against referees, that because nobody likes a referee, as I say. But yeah, I don't think it's any different.
And are there more women involved in refereeing, or are you the only one at the moment?
At the moment, I'm the only one with the RFL. There was another lady, but she's just give it up for the time being. There was Sarah Bennison a few years ago, but she seems to give it up. There's a few at like grassroots level, amateur level, that are coming through, but still, it's the same as playing and coaching. There's a very few.
What's your ultimate aim in terms of refereeing, Tara?
I don't really know, really. Just to stay on the ladder and keep going as far as I can and see where it takes me.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. Thanks.
Can I just ask you one more Jack. Question? Do you have any problems controlling these men and boys that you referee?
No, I don't think so. Refereeing can be difficult, but some games are harder than others, and sometimes the more challenging games are the more enjoyable ones. But as in terms of controlling the lads, it's just you take game by game and you just control them as a referee.
Okay, well, thanks very much indeed
for
joining
us.
Tara Jones, a rugby league referee, of course, and England international. Come on then, Jodie, spill the beans. Are you going to become a referee?
I don't think I could take it, no. I couldn't take all that abuse.
So she does get some abuse then from you?
I think just as much as anyone. It's handy to have her on the team, though. She knows exactly what calls should be. She knows, she's better than most of the referees we get, so she knows exactly what should be called and what shouldn't. So she challenges the refs every now and again in our games.
Yeah. Is there? I mean, what's it like out in the middle of a women's rugby league game? I mean, do you have the? You know, I played amateur rugby league for a long time. The language could be choice at times. The tackling could be perhaps bordering on the legal or illegal. I mean, what's it like in the women's game?
It's probably quite similar. I don't think there's not that many differences between the men's game. People think it's maybe softer or the level's not as good. Everything that happens in the men's game happens in our game. So there's always the odd bit of kicking off, but never anything major.
You get punch ups.
No, nothing major, just the odd bit, and it's always controlled by the referees. There's always the same respect for referees, and it's controlled in the exact same way the men's game are. I think there's a lot of more respect at amateur games often because you just get sent straight off, won't you?
That'll be a yes then. When Trevor said, "Do you get punch ups?" and you said, "Just a little bit." So that is that a yes? Is that a yes or a no?
Not well, me.
But generally, is that a yes or a no?
Not often, occasionally, but not often.
That's a yes then.
Yes.
Yeah, we can tick the yes box for that answer, can we?
Well, Amanda's smiling here.
Yeah, I've got a question for Amanda here, Trevor. This is the survey that BBC has done some time ago. I think they've released the details today. You'll find it on the BBC website if you want to read it. It's very, very interesting. I'm going to ask you the same question as well. Forgive me for this. Have you ever been criticised on social media or by any other method for your appearance?
No.
Never? Never experienced that?
No.
No. Well, according to this survey that's been done, 14% of females have. What about you, Geordie? Ever heard of anybody?
Anything to do with rugby or just generally?
Well, I suppose it's... I don't know.
Not when you're going for a night out. You know, we don't do that.
Rugby-wise, there's never a good photo when you're playing rugby. You can never get a good photo. So a little bit of banter, but nothing major, no.
Mm. I mean, it's obviously... women's soccer is taking off, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of the professionals in that sport. Do you ever see a day where rugby league could perhaps end up in the same vein? I mean, it could be way, way outside of your lifetime.
Yeah, I can't imagine it in my lifetime, or not in my playing career anyway. I can't see it happening, but potentially, yeah. The sport's good enough. I think the sport as a whole needs to grow, not just the women's game. The sport as a whole needs to grow, and I think it's definitely possible because the game's good enough. It just get more people involved, and the women's game will grow with it.
I'm going back to this survey that's been carried out. 40% of female elite athletes, which clearly you two are, in this particular area anyway, have experienced sexism, but only 7% have reported it. What do you make of that?
I think that would be true, yeah. I think sometimes it's just easier to go along with things rather than make an issue of it. I suppose as a woman, if you know, we're just like men, we're very passionate about what we do, and if we believe in something, like Jodie as a player and me as a coach, you know, you don't want to be seen to sort of be looking for the negatives in it. You just want to drive forward and be passionate and carry on doing that rather than thinking, well, you know, am I being discriminated against, am I being held back? You just want to fight your own fight, really.
Do you feel then the challenges, or not the challenge, your mindset is, we'll beat them at their own game, I'm sure I'm better and as good or whatever?
Not really. I coach because I love coaching.
Yeah, we can tell that.
And I've never sort of really looked at myself, if it sounds silly, this as a woman. It's only sometimes pointed out to me, which takes me as a shock that I'm actually a woman. To me, I'm a coach, and when I'm coaching, whether it's a man or a woman, they're a player. I don't really see the difference.
What about you, Geordie? 40% of those female athletes have experienced sexism. Only 7% have reported it. Are you surprised by that statistic?
I think I am quite a bit. I've never experienced it directly. I suppose there's sex. It depends how you're gonna interpret it. There's a sexism in the sense of it's not equal. So it depends how they're interpreting sexism, whether it's directly to them as an individual or as a sport, because there's very, very few sports where it's equal. But I've never directly experienced anything.
Okay.
If there was a sport you could be on parity with, then what would you like to see? Rugby league as?
Well, I think the tennis is the closest, in my opinion, to being with the men in terms of people watching, participating, the funding, any kind of sponsorship, everything. I think the women are up there with the men there. So if you could get it anywhere like that.
Yeah, prize money's different though, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
No. I'd still settle for the women's prize.
I still wouldn't mind it.
Liam's just, well, yeah, absolutely. Liam's, I think it's the same in the golf as well. They probably do play a few less games, so yeah. Whether that's anything to do with the equilibrium, I'm not sure. Right, we've been talking to Sean Wayne about you. Here's what I had to say about Amanda Wilkinson.
She's a very, very smart girl. She's great on the field. Very, very passionate on learning to improve, and very passionate that she looks after the community south of Wigan, and she bangs the drum for that, and really leads the way in that department. So I've been very impressed. She's really, really keen to understand and learn. Always up here watching us train, and she's getting the credit she deserves now.
That is the Wigan Warriors coach, Sean Wayne. Commentary on them, incidentally, on Sunday afternoon. They're away at Huddersfield. Nigel Spencer has tweeted this. The game needs to get a much higher profile through genuine marquee players. More revenue will pay for reserves. I would like to see the introduction of a return to A-team rugby or reserve team rugby, I must admit.
I'd rather spend the £100,000 on that, Jack. Anyway, we've been talking about women in rugby league, but what do you think about this marquee player? Because you're both avid rugby league fans. What do you think, Amanda?
Being at Wigan, we're quite happy we've got Sam Tompkins coming back. Yeah. So, you know, we're, at the moment, that's a biggie for us.
yeah, it is. I mean, Amanda, we heard earlier on that there's clearly resistance to it. I mean, Trevor doesn't want it. You know, there's all sorts of reasons. That, you know, one of the main situations that's cropped up is, you know, the bigger clubs will get bigger and the smaller clubs will continue to get smaller. The gap will widen. But hasn't that always been the case in most sports? Certainly most team sports.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. The wealthy clubs prosper and the ones who haven't got the finance, frankly, don't.
Yeah, and it's not always, you know, directly to do with their money. There's all the big issues around that, isn't there? You know, it's all sometimes about the youth system or the setup in general or who's at the top, you know, driving the club. I don't think it's always down to the little nitty-gritty of the money. Obviously, money within the sport does have a big indicator, but I think there's bigger issues around it, really. I think, like you said yourself, about introducing back, you know, A-team rugby. You know, we did away with the 21s and the 18s. You know, I think all that has a big factor within.
Well, if you're £100,000 paying to one player when you could take on 25, say, in an 18, it's a no-brainer to me. What do you think, Jody?
Marquee player.
Well, as a Warrington fan, I'd quite like it. We'd have the money to take advantage of it, but I do understand that the lower teams wouldn't. But I think you'd see more of people like Marwan Kukash. You'll see more investors coming in who can take advantage of that, and you might get the lower teams having someone come in who'll boost the fundings and let them take advantage of that.
This debate about lower teams, surely the lower teams, goodness me, I support one Oldham, you know.
We're not talking that low, Jack.
We certainly haven't got time for that discussion. That's true, that, Trevor. But they shouldn't be allowed to hold back. Surely somebody, a major investor, comes in. Because there might be people out there think, well, I can only invest so much. They can invest a bit more now. That shouldn't be allowed to happen, surely.
We're only talking one marquee player. I mean, to be honest, I mean, even at Salford, I know they've got to, if they could get everybody fit and didn't have the suspensions they've had all season, then they might have a team that would be challenged at the top, but they can only bring one more player in. And if you looked at the side that played against Widnes, you go, one more player to change that side, who would that be? It wouldn't do it for them. So, you know, marquee player wouldn't solve that problem.
Okay.
Anyway, Libby, I think
Libby Willis might be able to solve a few problems. What have you been saying?
Well,
here,
we just received this text message in, and it is worthy to read out. Phil in Widnes says, "Rugby league extra. 170,000 women and girls play." League in Australia. Australia and New Zealand played 3 games at Auckland Nines, all live on TV. They also played the curtain raiser to the ANZAC test, and late and State of Origin game is to be a curtain raiser to an NRL game. Seems time the RFL woke up to the benefits to be made from marketing the women's game.
Oh, that is Libby Willis. just a quick reminder, you can download this podcast or any other podcast, of course, of Rugby League Extra, bbc.co.uk/Radio Manchester. This one will be there, I would imagine, the way that the people work here, very, very soon after 7 o'clock. Right, very,
okay,
very briefly.
Quick, Jack, if you want to watch Women's Rugby League, then, Jody, tell our listeners where they can watch Rugby League this weekend. Women's Rugby League.
This weekend, there's Associations Cup games going on, so they're kind of our version of a trialing game, so a selection basis to kind of progress on. So There's games going on in Stanley for the England Lionesses are playing the Great Britain Armed Forces, and the England students are playing against the Great Britain Teachers. So some great games going on there.
Excellent.
Quick prediction for you. We'll start with tomorrow night because Wigan don't play, do you? Warrington against Catalan Dragons. You go, Amanda Wilkinson.
I think I'd have to go Warrington by about 10.
Warrington by 10. Okay. What about our feature commentary game, St Helens against Salford, Jodie Cunningham?
Yeah, I think St Helens are going to walk that one. I think St Helens by 20.
St Helens by 20.
All right. What about Wigan and Huddersfield at the weekend then? On Sunday, Huddersfield Wigan, should I say?
I'd go Wigan, but I think it's going to be close. There'll only be 2-4 points in it.
And one for you, Amanda. Is Lee Centurion's record up and available against London Broncos away this weekend? Could it all end 27 unbeaten games?
No. I really like Lee. I think they're a great team.
Me too.
Loads of potential. I think they could do it. Tell me lies,
tell me sweet little lies. So let's separate the facts from the fiction.
The law was the singing in the shower, actually. I'm a chronic singer in the shower. Anything old Aussie classics like Cold Chisel and Midnight Oil, new stuff, anything, I'm a bad singer in the shower. So my wife and daughter try and stay away from the bathroom when I'm near it because I like singing in the shower, but I'm absolutely terrible at it. Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
The Rugby League Extra Podcast.
BBC Radio Manchester.